Satire on the TV sets of 1964 in the form of a series known as TW3, or That Was the Week That Was. That's our focus on this week's broadcast of Echoes of a Century. I'm King David McKenzie.
That was the week that was. In North Vietnam, a jet was there. But in the South, things were up in the air from a coup or two. So what else is new? Well, Ranger 8 photographed the moon, and pictures from the spot where it was aimed proved the Sea of Tranquility was aptly named. No waves or foam, or Yankee go home. Shine on, shine on, harvest moon. But don't you see, spacemen will be standing on landing sites, demanding sites, and never agree. And then you'll have our earthly brand of lunacy. So shine on, shine on, harvest moon, for me and the world that weakly continues bleakly. Our embassy man was told by Syria, you're spying to see why our army's inferior. Rusk is waiting to see what curve he'll be thrown by Minister Curve de Merville. General Khan's an envoy but doesn't know which ambassador to overthrow. The London Stock Exchange elite paid half a pound for the Beetle Beat. The UN wasn't very calm when Albania dropped its political bomb and demanded a vote on who should pay. But most of the others hastened to say, don't call for a vote, just call it a day. And that was the week that was.
Live from New York, That Was the Week That Was.
In 1962, the British Broadcasting Corporation noticed the upsurge in popularity of satire in the UK at the time, and scheduled a TV series that offered a weekly dose of said material, a David Frost concoction called That Was the Week That Was. It turned out to be quite an influential program. Since the United States was the home of some of the leading satirists of the period, Mort Saul, Lenny Bruce, and Dick Gregory being probably the best known at the time, Frost decided to bring the show to New York and make an American version. The NBC network took a chance on the program, and TW3, as its fans called it by then, was introduced to Yankee audiences in a pilot episode aired on November the 10th of 1963. In January 1964, just as the Beatles were beginning a stateside craze for all things British, TW3 became a weekly NBC offering on Friday nights starring David Frost, just before the popular Jack Parr program. After a while, the two programs lobbed barbs at each other, TW3 once jokingly airing a sign-off announcement saying that NBC would return to the air the following morning with the Today Show, immediately before the start of that week's Parr broadcast, and Parr shooting back with a few comments about Henry Morgan's Amateur Hour. Morgan was a frequent guest on TW3 in the first season. The Republican Party got back at the frequent jabs TW3 would send its way by specifically buying time for presidential candidate Barry Goldwater's campaign in the time slot NBC usually scheduled TW3, causing the series to lose its audience by the following May when NBC canceled the series. This is a collection of audio clips from that series, including the entire last broadcast on which the guest star was Steve Allen. And if some of the musical selections sound familiar, it should be noted that one of the regular contributors to the series was one Tom Lehrer, who put out the best-selling album That Was the Year That Was, featuring material that he'd written for the series a few months after NBC's cancellation took effect.
Prediction for 1964, June the 25th. Liz Taylor free to marry at last. I shall let her go, says Richard Burton. A spokesman for the Republicans said today, with the candidacy of Senator Barry Goldwater, the Republican Party is on the way back. And who knows, one day it may even go forwards.
You're a grand old flag, you're a high-flying flag, but it seems that wherever you hang, you're becoming more a target for a whimper that ends with a bang. Then we send a note that the president wrote, but whenever the point is made, should old acquaintance be forgot, we just send them more foreign aid.
This week, Lester Kirkendall, an Oregon State College professor, told a session of the National Education Convention that college boys and girls have far more sexual experience today than they did 10 years ago. Anxious to learn how far this sexual revolution has gone, TW3 dispatched its reporter to interview an average college student.
Hello there. I wonder if you'd mind answering a few personal questions.
Well, I guess not.
It's about your sexual practices.
Oh, I thought you meant something personal.
I understand that many college students feel that premarital sex is all right.
All right, it's practically perfect.
I know. I mean, how do you feel about sexual relations before the wedding?
I think it's wrong if it delays the ceremony.
I see, yes. But have you ever considered the moral consequences?
No. No, actually, sex is the last thing I think about. Helps me sleep.
Yes, I see. Sociologists tell us that the availability of efficient birth control devices makes college girls more promiscuous. What do you feel makes college girls promiscuous?
Well, I've had very good results with a Madhavani album.
Yes, I see.
You know, now, a glass of wine, a little Swinburne.
All right, all right. Tell me, if you will, do your teachers try to help you with this problem?
Oh, sure. Last week the dean called me in and warned me about cases of promiscuity on the campus.
Did it help you?
Yes, sir. I got 3 good leads. Is that all?
A class?
Yes, sir. Lots of class.
Just one more question, please. Do you feel that college students are given too much freedom in sexual matters?
Oh, no, no, I don't think so. I agree with the man who said the aim of life is self-development.
That's wild, isn't it?
It sure is.
It's been a most illuminating week in American politics this week. Senator Goldwater has been addressing himself to the great issues of the day and explaining where he stands, aside. What indeed are the principles of Goldwater's new style conservatism? Well, he's in favor of the United Nations in principle, but against it in practice. He's in favor of foreign aid in principle, but against it in practice. And of course, everybody's against the H-bomb in principle, but he's in favor of it in practice. Nelson Rockefeller, of course, says, why should a man be prevented from becoming president simply because he's a divorcee? Senator Margaret Chase Smith says, why should a man be prevented from becoming president simply because he's a woman? And Richard Nixon says, why should a man be prevented from becoming president simply because he's Richard Nixon? Even so, the Republican Party could well settle for him in the end. He is, after all, the only candidate with experience in the one area where the polls show the Republican nominee is going to need it. Defeat. But what of the Democrats? Things are not going to be all smooth sailing for Lyndon Johnson. Teenagers continue to cause social upheavals. Television is concerned mainly with the advertiser. Big business commands exorbitant profits. And things are even worse outside his family.
On Tuesday, the last major primary of 1964 passed into history. And now all eyes are fixed firmly on the San Francisco Cow Palace, where the Republicans will hold their national convention on July 10th. TW3 presents now its coming attractions of a grand show for the whole family.
Coming soon, Showdown at the Cow Palace. The startling story of four men and a woman who rode west in search of power.
There was Rocky. He held the key to power, but gambled it all on one mad love affair.
There was Dick, driven shrieking and sobbing from town. He returned to wipe out his humiliation.
There was Scranton Bill, the quiet man, who rode his dark horse through the quiet streets, murmuring, I want to feel wanted.
There was Cabot, torn by a cruel decision. Should he come to San Francisco and give up a good $6,000 a year job?
And there was the woman, Maggie.
Seat. Thousands of screaming delegates grabbed for the bandwagon.
Sing. Sing. Dwight Eisenhower sing the movie's hit song, That Big Driving Range in the Sky.
And see.
The most terrifying scene in motion picture history. The invasion of the Goldwater, the Goldwater, the Goldwater, the Goldwater. Thrill to the repeal of Social Security. Weep at the sale of TVA. Cringe at the destruction of the UN.
Showdown at the Cow Palace. A Goldwater production in association with 18th Century Fox.
This week, Malcolm X broke with Elijah Muhammad's black Muslim movement and announced he was organizing a politically oriented black nationalist party.
The revolution for Negro rights in America, like every great moral issue, has spanned extremist groups on both sides. On one side are the black Muslims, on the other, the White Citizens Council. We'd like you to hear some actual quotations from these diametrically opposed groups.
The evolutionary lead of the white man over the Negro is 200,000 years. The black man was the original man. Our only salvation lies in economic and political action. Political and economic activity is the answer. The moderates are chicken. The liberals are fools. We are against violence. We will not attack anyone. Unless all else fails. Unless we are attacked. We are against integration. Integration is not the answer. We are for segregation. We are for separation.
Curious, isn't it? How the extremes seem to echo one another. Well, the force of history seems to be in the direction of integration. Of course, there may be a way in which these two groups might accomplish their aims. Why don't they integrate? This week, the Ku Klux Klan announced its plan to set up private, segregated towns for Klansmen and their families.
In addition, the Klan announced it's trying hard to improve its image. At recent Klan meetings, members have been turned away because they've failed to wear jackets and ties, or because they had alcohol on their breath.
Well, it's happened. The Klan has finally gone Ivy League. Perhaps someday an American dramatist will write a folksy little play about one of the Ivy League towns of the Ku Klux Klan.
Doesn't the Kleagle look regal, dressed in white tie and tails? Oh, it fills our hearts with calm to know the hand that throws the bomb will be a hand with clean fingernails.
Doesn't Miss Gretchen look fetching, sequins and chiffon strips? Just to show you what finesse is, she not only makes her dresses, but she also made the horsehide whips.
The Jackson Sentinel was down on us, used to frown on us as abnormal.
But their fashion columns put the fashion crown on us, since our lynchings now are strictly formal.
There's the Grand Dragon, still bragging, not a drink since March 19.
Why, in fact, he's vitriolic, over liquids alcoholic, but I hope he brought the kerosene.
Puffs, Mr. Shelburne, you'll give us a black eye. Though we know you make the matches at your factory in Natchez,
You simply must wear a tie.
And besides, as you can see, this affair's RSVP.
I'm so glad we said those ugly uniforms must go. So unchic, you know, just to keep on.
Why, I never realized until a week ago that sheets are also nice to sleep on.
Since we're dressy and decked out, eject out any crude, unkempt rogue. Our affairs, life, and look are spurning, but the thought just keeps returning that our very next cross burning will be photographed by Vogue.
TW3 presents its presidential non-preference poll.
2 weeks ago, we honored Barry Goldwater, star of That Was the Century That Was. Last week, we paid tribute to LBJ, Lightbulb Johnson, or, as he is known to his intimate friends, Mr. President.
This week, we would like to honor a man of imagination and intellect. Instead, we've chosen Governor George Wallace of Alabama. Here is what some of our viewers had to say about the Dixie ambassador of ill will.
Mrs. Mickey Magnuson of Daly City, California writes, I'm afraid that if Wallace ever got the upper hand in America and subjugated the Negro, he'd start in on us people with freckles.
Mr. Ted Zellman of Miami writes, I suspect the only time George Wallace spent in school, he was blocking the doorway.
Mr. Emmanuel Lertzman of Brooklyn writes, the time has come, excuse me, the time has come, the Wallace said, to speak of many things, of schools and segregation and Martin Luther King's. Yet why create a furor here when there's so little solace in living with the stress and strains of Deutschland über Wallace?
Miss Janice McMillan, age 11, of Rochester, New York, writes, I would least like Governor Wallace as my president. I think it's pretty childish to feel superior to someone because their skin is a different color.
Well, Janice, age 11, think kindly of Governor Wallace. He has nothing against the American Negro. No doubt he thinks every man should own one.
Just because a person's complexion is tan, tan as the sands upon the shore, doesn't mean that he is a much better man, or that someone up there likes him more.
Red, green, blue, or white, nothing but reflected light, just a nerve impression on the mind. The Lord is colorblind, colorblind. Just because a person's complexion is black, black as the night behind the star, doesn't mean he's got to be on the right track, or that he is better than we are.
Red, green, blue, or white, nothing but reflected light, just a nerve impression on the mind. The Lord is colorblind, colorblind.
Complexion is lighter, lighter than his neighbors east or west, doesn't make his ways any better or righter, or prove he is worse than all the rest.
Well, red, green, blue, or white, nothing but reflected light, just a nerve impression on the mind. The Lord is colorblind.
Just because a person
yellow as the grapefruit on the tree, doesn't mean that he is a much finer fellow, born superior to you and me.
Grass, green, blue or white, nothing but reflected light, just a nerve impression on the mind. The Lord is colorblind. Colorblind.
Red, green, blue or white,
colorblind.
Nothing but reflected light,
colorblind.
Nikita Khrushchev said today that he's been photographing the United States from one of his satellites in outer space. Oh, Nikita. You too.
Since those remarkable birds moved into the White House, no pastime has been more popular along the Potomac than bird watching. The birds in Washington, in fact, have multiplied to the point where a whole flight of them will be winging to the Democratic convention in Atlantic City.
The indefensible secretary bird, known as the McNamara's Edsel. This bird lays all its eggs in a missile basket, leaving no ground defense against the red birds. Has a loud cry of,
Vietnam okay, Vietnam okay, Vietnam okay.
The Bat Bay Bobby Bird tries to fly with the Linden Bird. Has sharp pleading cry of,
Veep, veep, veep.
The White-breasted Wallace Bird flies far from home to raid the nests of northern birds, maybe identified by his unnerving shriek.
Not my sister, not my sister, not my sister.
The hovering Humphrey bird, sometimes called the left-handed whip bird. Its cry sounds like,
need a quorum, need a quorum, need a quorum.
The Humphrey bird, incidentally, is distinguished by a single bill.
The bumbling Maya Wagner bird has dull gray plumage. When in danger, he responds with a fearful cry,
Rocky did it, Rocky did it, Rocky did it.
And lastly, the lordly Linden bird, commonly known as the Texas Roadrunner, prefers to nest in darkened houses, deceives enemies with the cry of,
economy! Economy! Economy!
And when in distress, issues the plaintive call,
Bobby who? Bobby who? Bobby who?
Yes, hi, ladies and gentlemen. Hello there, hello, hello. And welcome once again to America's favorite television show, That Wonderful War. No, it wasn't the Boer War. It wasn't the Korean War. It wasn't even the Crimean War. Yes, that's right. You guessed it. Ha-ha. It was that wonderful war, World War III. Will you ever forget it? Remember when it began and we were all singing?
We're at war again. Get out those old time blackout shades. We're at war again. Scrap, drive, and parades. You'll be heroes, you husbands and brothers. Wave goodbye to your wives and your mothers. Yes, the USA has gone all the way. We're at war again.
Hey! Yes, remember, those were the days when there used to be a Florida and a Texas attached to the United States. Then came the dastardly sneak attack on Perth Amboy, New Jersey. You remember Perth Amboy. Soon, aroused Americans were singing this stirring song.
Well, so long, Mom. I'm off to drop the bomb, so don't wait up for me. Though I may roam, I'll come back to my home. Though it may be just a pile of debris. Remember, Mommy, I'm off to get a commie. So send me a salami somehow. course I'll look for you when the war is over, about an hour and a half from now.
Hey! Yes, things looked bad for a while in World War III, but then Japan, Germany, and the United States, the Allies, fought bravely back. Inspired by wonderful songs like this one, which I'm sure you'll remember.
The fallout's fallen, the wind is blowing, New York is gone and Chicago's going, and I'm the only girl left in Kalamazoo. But don't worry, baby, I'm waiting for you. So keep them flying, as victory beckons. Twill all be over in 20 seconds. Then you and I can be together once more in a world completely at peace and totally free until World War IV.
Isn't she lovely? And she's so radioactive, ladies and gentlemen. Ah, but who can ever forget it? That wonderful war, World War III. When it was over, all the American people cheered. All 700 of us. There goes one of them now. But my goodness, so many memories. Remember the enemy's big mistake? The day they attacked our 51st state, Formosa? Yes, sir. But you know, that war is just a memory today. And as this country's great leader, President Dick Gregory... As President Gregory said the other day to Vice President Jim Aubrey, he said, as I stand here, he said, in the nation's capital, Fargo, North Dakota, I want all you fellas to know that World War III marked an important step forward in the history of the human race, for it accomplished one major thing, ladies and gentlemen. It kept the world safe and preserved and ready for stupid shows like this one, that wonderful war. Good night once again.
This afternoon in Washington, cigarette industry spokesman Robert Miner told a congressional committee that health warnings on cigarette packages might cause tobacco companies to make even stronger claims for their products. Thus, suggests Mr. Miner, health warnings are potentially dangerous to smokers' health. Mr. Miner, you get TW3's Double Think Award of the Year.
One of the greatest problems facing this nation is that of the high school dropout. Each year, more and more students are quitting school without getting a diploma.
We at TW3 feel sorry for high school dropouts because of all the fun things that they're missing by not going to high school. And the worst thing about being a dropout is that you don't have a school song. So now we'd like to present our non-school song.
No more pencils, no more books, no more teachers, dirty looks, dropouts!
Dropouts! Yay, team! On dropouts down the field, ain't we the national shame? Cheer for our fun-loving breed, who can't hardly read or write our name. March, dropouts, backward march, ain't we a tragedy? Leave us unite and fight, fight, fight for good old stupidity. Dropouts out of school, proud of the will to fail. You won't find us in the school halls, look in the pool halls or in jail. Long may our colors wave, sons of the black and blue. Light-hearted chaps who steal up caps, we've got nothing else to do.
Ignoramus, there you are, sitting in your hopped-up car, and your brains ain't up to par, and your ears stick out too far.
Go, dropouts, go and buy one. comic book or two. You need some rest and enjoyment. Your unemployment check is due soon. Dropouts very soon. You'll wear a different hat. Soon you will be in the army. Just try dropping out of that.
TW3 presents its weekly roundup of delightful news from everywhere. The overthrow of the government of Brazil this week is only the most recent of many Latin American revolts. Some claim that South America has some sort of a record set there. The record looks to us like 45 revolutions a minute.
Washington. President Johnson announced on Wednesday that while farmers are getting 30% less for foods they produce, the housewives are paying 30% more. Well, that 60% goes somewhere. Do you suppose those marvelous things you get with trading stamps aren't really free?
On Wednesday, Senator Everett Sugarthroat Dirksen, the Republican Senate leader, attacked the part of the civil rights bill that would outlaw segregation in motels. On Thursday, Drew Pearson revealed that Senator Dirksen has been a frequent guest at Bobby Baker's Carousel Motel. Funny. One day the senator supports discrimination, and the next day he shows none at all.
Just 3 hours ago, Pravda announced that former Russian Premier Georgi Malenkov, former Foreign Minister Molotov, and former First Deputy Premier Kaganovich have all been expelled from the Communist Party for supporting the Red Chinese. We suspect at this very moment they would rather be dead than red. And by tomorrow, who knows? Next fall, all three networks will make many changes in their television schedules. For some reason, NBC is moving TW3 to Tuesday nights at 9:30 Eastern Standard Time. We didn't even know NBC was on Tuesday night.
Parr will still be seen by a few stalwart viewers at his regular time. The Jack Parr Show will be preceded by a half hour of tetanus shots.
Another major change in the fall, the entire ABC network will be seen on the CBS network in the mornings. Europeans who see American TV for the first time are a little bit astonished or sometimes upset by it. Well, good, bad, or indifferent, it's our TV, and we think it's beautiful.
Oh, beautiful for trend expos, for ratings high and low, that keep hillbillies on the air. Mediocrity.
Oh, beautiful for rental cars, for living bras and pants, for newlyweds who owe their bliss to antiperspirants. Oh, TV land, oh, TV land, romance depends on thee. Oh, better death than denture breath or irregularity. Oh, beautiful for buffering to banish waves of pain, for florist and no cavities, for anvils in the brain. Oh, TV land, oh, TV land, our health depends on thee. Thy products flood our tired blood from sea to shining sea.
Encourage.
encouraged by the success of George Murphy in becoming a United States senator, other Hollywood actors are entering politics. Ronald Reagan plans to run for governor in 1966. Actor Raymond Massey has said that he might be interested in entering politics. Wherever movie stars go, you can be sure movie stars' agents are sure to follow.
Hello, political casting agency. We have an actor to fit every elective office. You're the chairman of the Republican Party in Nevada? What can I do for you? You need a senator. I see. Well, let me see here. I got Charles Bickford. Did Charles Bickford ever play a senator? Are you kidding? There are three senators playing Charles Bickford. Certainly. Everett Dirksen's been doing him for years. What's that? Can he sing and dance? Look, all United States senators don't have to sing and dance. No. Well, yeah, Charles Bickford can carry a tune, but you know. Who? Spencer Tracy? No, I'm very sorry. Spence won't take anything less than a cabinet post. How about Jimmy Stewart? Well, I don't know. Jim won't actively campaign for the office, but he might accept an honest draft. Yeah, okay, thanks for calling. Got a call. Hello? Yeah, you want a comedian? For what job? Governor of the state of Alabama. Yeah. I think you better stick with the one you got. Hello, PCA. Oh, this is the Republican National Committee? You need a president, yes. You want to know what actors have played the role? Let me see here. There's Henry Fonda, Frederick March, Peter Sellers. Look, I suggest you take Peter Sellers because, you see, he can also play all the members of the cabinet, your combined chiefs of staff, and one branch of the armed service. What do you mean, can he sing and dance? It doesn't matter. Wait a minute.
This week, American buildings were under attack around the globe. Today, for example, mobs of angry demonstrators attacked the American Library in Surabaya, or Surabaya. In recent weeks, American embassies have been stoned and burned in Cairo, Prague, Nairobi, and Jakarta. Yet despite all this vilification, not one word of complaint has been heard from the ambassadors on the scene. We wonder if the press hasn't been exaggerating these anti-American outbursts, or are the diplomats just being diplomatic?
Here in the American embassy, we're helping the natives out through famine and drought. We're courting them, supporting them, we're giving them food, and they love us now beyond any doubt. Leave the windows open, Ralph, they're throwing rocks again. You'll get accustomed to the custom. It happens now and then. We are proud to say that our foreign aid is helping the country grow, though progress is slow. But every day we find a way to win a few friends. There's a spark of love beginning to glow. Get the rickshaw ready, Ralph, they burned the limousine. But isn't it nice to know they've used American gasoline? Yes, our foreign policy's working well. Don't believe all the papers, things are swell.
Yesterday, commenting in his syndicated column on the lack of a definite policy in Vietnam, Joseph Alsop estimated that the chances of the United States coming up at this point with a policy that will lead quickly to peace are only a little better than even money, about 7-5 in our favor. We wonder if they'd agree with that estimate in Las Vegas.
Hello, Benny the bookie, best odds in Vegas. You want to know the odds on the North Vietnamese overrunning Saigon by closing day at Hialeah? Well, we're quoting 9-5. Okay, Charlie, you're down for 500 skins on the Viet Cong. All right, good enough. Hello, Benny the bookie. Chinese intervention on the ground, 4-1, right. All right, you got 2,000 and a 600 mil Chinese. Yeah, I got you down here. No, yeah. Hello, Benny the bookie. What's that? Chinese air support for North Vietnam? North Vietnam? That's even odds. Pick 'em. Oh, sorry, pal. That's the best I can do. Well, everything's a gamble these days. Ask Maxwell Taylor. Sure. Well, here's... No, I can't. Hello, Benny the Bookie. The present South Vietnamese government lasting until the All-Star game? That's 99 to 1 against. Now, hold your 10 grand. We're not taking any bets on that. No. No, I gotta go. I took a steam bath, yeah. Hello, Benny the Bookie. War with Russia? 9 to 1. War with Peking Reds? 7 to 1. Use of atomic weapons? Us or them? Us 12 to 1. Them 6 to 1. Okay, you got it. World War III across the board. Yeah.
First we got the bomb and that was good, 'cause we love peace and motherhood. Then Russia got the bomb, but that's okay, 'cause the balance of powers maintained that way. Who's next? France got the bomb, but don't you grieve, 'cause they're on our side, I believe. China got the bomb, but have no fears, they can't wipe us out for at least 5 years. Who's next? Now Indonesia claims that they are gonna get one any day. South Africa wants two, that's right. One for the black and one for the white. Who's next? Egypt's gonna get one too, just to use on you know who. So Israel's getting tense, wants one in self-defense. The Lord's our shepherd, says the psalm. Just in case, we better get a bomb. Who's next? Luxembourg is next to go, and who knows, maybe Monaco will try to stay serene and calm when Alabama gets the bomb. Who's next? Who's next? Who's next? And if someone sets it off on some pretext, and the human race is gone, I wonder who's next. Who's next?
Trips abroad discouraged by President Johnson and the federal government, except, of course, to Vietnam. And yet, at the same time, American airline and steamship companies are still running ads like these. TWA says, fly to Europe. Northwest Orient Airlines suggests flying to Japan. Pan Am says, fly to Europe. The United States lines tell everybody, don't miss the boat.
Come to think of it, maybe instead of discouraging travel abroad, the government should take a tip from these ads and start encouraging travel in the United States, like this.
Suddenly, you're in fabulous, unforgettable New Jersey. Love with Hohokus. Lose your heart to Hackensack. Bask in the soothing sun of fantastic Jersey City. You'll be amazed at the rich variety of relaxing New Jersey. Its gourmet restaurants, its broad avenues, its stately homes. Yes, you'll never forget wonderful New Jersey, gateway to incredible North Philadelphia.
If you visit American City, you will find it very pretty. Just two things of which you must beware. Don't drink the water and don't breathe the air. Pollution, pollution. They got soot and sewage and mud. Turn on your tap and get hot and cold running crud. See the halibuts and the sturgeons being wiped out by detergents. Fish gotta swim, birds gotta fly, but they don't last long if they try. Pollution, pollution, you can use the latest toothpaste and then rinse your mouth with industrial waste. Just go out for a breath of air and you'll be ready for Medicare. The city streets are really quite a thrill. The hoods don't get you, the monoxide will. Pollution, pollution, wear a gas mask and a veil, and then you can breathe long as you don't inhale. Lots of things there that you can drink. stay away from the kitchen sink. The breakfast garbage they throw out upstate, you can drink downtown on your luncheon date. So go to the city, see the crazy people there, like lambs to the slaughter. Oh, 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 oh. They're drinking the water and breathing the air.
Hardly a day seems to pass that there isn't news in the papers of another $1 million worth of heroin confiscated in a narcotics raid by the police. But there are 23,000 known addicts in New York City alone, and despite all of the police crackdowns, they seem to be getting this stuff from somewhere and someone. We wonder who.
When the shades of night are falling, comes a fellow everyone knows. It's the old dope peddler, spreading joy wherever he goes. Every evening you will find him around our neighborhood. It's the old dope peddler, doing well by doing good. He gives the kids free samples because he knows full well that today's young innocent face will be tomorrow's clientele. Here's a cure for all your troubles. Here's an end to all distress. It's the old dope peddler with his powdered happiness.
Tonight, TW3 brings you the news for the last time. Try to remember that after tonight, any TV news about President Johnson or the Congress that sounds perfectly ridiculous to you is not meant as a joke.
Naturally, the entire TW3 news staff has a feeling of nostalgia. Nostalgia, from the Latin word meaning unemployed.
For it's a long, long time from September to May, but the days grow short when you finish 96th in the Nielsen ratings.
95th. December the 31st, the National Space Agency announces that by 1968, it hopes to have a man on the moon, if we're lucky. The Defense Department announces that by 1968, it hopes to have a man on Earth, if we're lucky.
Sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, for if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go, all suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. Oh, we will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is a rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. Down by the old maelstrom, there'll be a storm before the calm, and we will all bake together when we bake. And there'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 million hunks of well-done steak. Oh, we will all char together when we char, and let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out Diem when you see that ICBM, and the party will become as you are. You will all go directly to your respective Valhallas. Go directly, do not pass go, do not collect $200. And we will all go together when we go. Every Hottentot and every Eskimo, when the air becomes Uranus, we will all go simultaneous. Yes, we will all go together, all go together. We will all go together when we go. Don't you worry, you won't be lost if there is no David Frost. After all, if you want entertainment, intellectual style, there's always Lawrence Welk, Donna Reed, Patty Duke, and Gomer Pyle. Big deal, this show, we're really not important at all. Go. But look what you've got to look forward to for the ball. Tammy and Gidget and Jeannie and Hank, Shindig the Second and the Hullabaloo. Run for your life and my mother the car. Sometimes you don't know how lucky you are. Bonanza and Branded, Bob Hope and Bewitched, Gunsmoke, Laredo and Convoy and Combat, Flipper, Ed Sullivan and What's My Line? Totally New and Simply Divine? Andy Williams, Dean Martin, Steve Lawrence, the Smothers Brothers. Each one is sweet and each one is cute and each one the same as the others. Wild West, Honey West, I Spy, Jesse James, Cracker B and F Troop, all designed for the avant-garde group. Beverly Hillbillies and Petticoat Junction will, of course, continue to function. Big deal, our show. We've used up all the time that we could. Tonight we go. What shows will show an improvement this fall as they show. For example, Place will show its face 3 times a week, not twice. Isn't that nice? Don't you agree? Run up the flag, here's a salute, hip hip hooray for Fall TV. Gonna get it right between the eyes.
This is John Canceller outside the NBC studios in New York, where for the past 16 months, war has raged between NBC and TW3. But today, the insurgent TW3 guerrillas at last conceded defeat to the network mercenaries. Indeed, at 3 o'clock this afternoon at Appomattox Courthouse, TW3 leaders officially surrendered their blunted sword to the NBC peacock. At the moment, the TW3 rebels are being disarmed of their brains, and at exactly 10 o'clock this evening, the final ceasefire will take place. At that time, it is rumored Nancy Ames, Pat England, Phyllis Newman, and Bert Tilstrom will flee the country for Argentina. Buck Henry, whoever he is, will be publicly tried on Hullabaloo for war crimes. And David Frost will be hanged by his heels from the highest lamppost in downtown Peyton Place, part two. This is John Canceller returning you now to whatever is left of That Was the Week. That was.
Well, personally, I hate goodbyes, so let me just say hello out there, because that's it, really. That was the week. That was. Good night.
That was the week. That was. It's over. So bye bye.
Your TW3 announcer has been Jerry Damon. Next week, see the premiere of Cloak of Mystery. Each weekday morning, Bob Barker hosts Truth or Consequences. Look in tomorrow morning at 10, 9 Central and Pacific Time. And now stay tuned to The Science of Spying, an NBC News special with John Chancellor next on NBC.
That was the week that was. Yeah, it was. That concludes this week's broadcast of Echoes of a Century. This program was an independent production by Doll Shoe Radio Creations, copyright 2006. Produced in the studios of WLSU La Crosse, an affiliate of Wisconsin Public Radio, on the La Crosse campus of the University of Wisconsin. I'm King David McKenzie. Thanks for listening. I hope that you'll join us again at this same time next week. Until then, remember, fear and God do not inhabit the same space.